Well, good morning. The title of the message is, Hey, Who Goes There? And we're reading from Matthew 20, 1 through 16. For the kingdom of heaven is like a landowner who went out early in the morning to hire workers for the vineyard. He agreed to pay them a denarius for the day and sent them into the vineyard. About 9 in the morning, he went out and saw others standing in the marketplace doing nothing. He told them, You also go and work in my vineyard, and I will pay you whatever is right. So they went. He went out again at about noon and about 3 in the afternoon and did the same thing. About 5 in the afternoon, he went out and found some others standing around. He asked them, Why have you been standing here all day long doing nothing? Because no one has hired us, they answered. He said to them, You also go and work in my vineyard. When evening came, the owner of the vineyard said to his foreman, Call the workers and pay them their wages, beginning with the last ones hired and going to the first. The workers who were hired about 5 in the afternoon came and each received a denarius. So when those came who were hired first, they expected to receive more. But each one of them also received a denarius. When they received it, they began to grumble against the landowner. Those who were hired last worked only 1 hour, they said. And you have made them equal to us who have bore the burden of the work and the heat of the day. He answered one of them, Am I not being unfair to you, friend? Didn't you agree to work for a denarius? Take your pay and go. I want to give the one who was hired last the same as I give you. Don't I have the right to do what I want with my own money? Or are you envious because I am generous? So the last will be first and the first will be last. I have a little story. A gold miner died and went to heaven. At the gate, St. Peter asked, What have you done in your life? When the man gave his occupation, St. Peter explained that there was already a surplus of miners in heaven. May I stay if I get rid of the others? The fellow inquired. St. Peter agreed. Once in, the miner wandered around until he saw a couple familiar faces. He whispered that there was gold, a gold strike in hell. Soon the place was empty of miners. But after a while, the miner asked St. Peter for permission to leave. Even if I did start the rumor, he said, there just might be something to it. I think it kind of goes to show sometimes how we get carried along. Maybe we all are looking for something. We're never quite satisfied. Maybe we live in a delusional world sometimes. We figure things out and try to get away with things, and we're never quite satisfied. And maybe he didn't really want to be alone after all anyway. Today, I want to talk a little bit about the parable. Parables are interesting ways of illustrating ideas. They give many different views of an idea. This one could be making a case for equal pay, whether you earn it or not. It could be used to support the minimum wage of what we are arguing about now, $15 or more or whatever. But I don't really think it has to do with wages at all. I think the parable can be a measure. Parables, throughout Jesus used them a lot, can be a measure of where we are at in our spiritual journey, because they don't all agree. They don't all support the same idea along the way. I think if you read a parable with a preconceived idea, it will affect the meaning that you come out with. I think the parable, to me, what I want to use it this morning for is about salvation. I think the denarius represents salvation. You could fit it in to a creation story an illustration of the heavenly realms. Or it could be also illustrate that Daenerys could illustrate life's energy or the soul that each one of us give or have. I believe that creation goes beyond this earth. That I think that we have the creation story in Genesis. And I believe, as Anselm summed it up about God, I'll illustrate that first. He was a theologian sometime back, and he believed that God was beyond any idea that we could conceive of. In other words, if we could conceive or understand it, then God is beyond that. And I tend to agree with him.
And if we understood it, then it wouldn't be God.
Yeah, pretty much. That was his explanation of how God was. I think in Genesis 1 illustrates the direction I would like to go a little bit this morning. Genesis 1:1, in the beginning God created the heavens and earth. To me, I believe that God is beyond all creation. Now, God created the heavenly realms, in which we have talked a little bit about last Sunday. The angels, Lucifer, and the fall, which we talked about, the rebellion, that realm is a created realm also. They are created beings. We are also created beings. But we're down, the way I see it, down the line a ways. We're not up into the heavenly realms of which it's talked about. We're still living here on earth. We're living on a small portion of creation here on earth. If Jesus said he had to go to prepare a place, then this place had to be created. It had to be part of creation. It is part of. And I'm not saying that once you're created that it doesn't live on in eternity. Because eternity is not an absolute, is not like God beyond which we understand. An eternity is a measure of time. It's a time-based concept, which most people think that time, when you talk about eternity, they mean forever and ever, and even forever and ever is a time-based concept. It's not it's an idea that lives in the created realms. It's not, the way I see it, not above, where Anselm says, above, beyond creation. So there's this one great mover which moves all, and which we don't understand, and I'm not even going to try to go there. So we have this realm, God, whatever that is. And God created heavenly realms reaching out down to us.
I like the Living Bible, Genesis 1. It's translated, when God began creating the heavens and the earth was at first a shapeless, chaotic mass, with the Spirit of God brooding over the dark vapors.
So the idea still perpetuates the idea that God is outside of creation.
Yeah.
And some people think that God, that creation is an appendage to God, or it's within God. In other words, God created creation within God itself. So a boundless something.
Yeah, I wasn't disagreeing at all. I just like different translations sometimes.
He would be out in space then.
Be what? He would be
out in space.
Yeah.
Yeah. And is there any end to space?
No. We in our human mind, that's where eternity in my concepts can live or exist in dark matter and dark energy. Our universe is just one part of this great whatever.
You think there's no end to anything, then?
There's no end, no. See, we as humans think in terms of a linear line. That's the only thing we can't understand. We don't understand things all happening at the same time and no end and no beginning. I mean, at least I can. That goes over to the idea of absolute and ultimates, which I have no idea what that is. I can't even conceive something that's never been had a beginning or an end. And I don't think that the created realms, which I was talking about, which Lucifer and all the angels and all this, you know, Jesus and all that comes from, is necessarily going to end sometime. I don't necessarily, of course, I don't really know. I mean, science does this too. They project these ideas, theoretical physicists project these ideas and thoughts, and they constantly are changing and growing and are alive. And so we're constantly changing what we know and what we understand. We're way down here at the end trying to look up through and trying to figure some of this stuff out. And it gets very, very difficult. I mean, we can make projections and thoughts. I think if you start understanding the bigger picture, it helps you understand and appreciate what salvation really is about. I mean, here we are way down in this little earth over some little obscure solar system, but yet God is conscious of us. God, whatever that you can see that to be, and sent Jesus or sent somebody down here as a messenger to. So I think it helps to really appreciate what salvation is about. I think if you this particular parable doesn't fit in real well with a lot of theology of I'm saved and you're not. I can remember growing up, this particular parable was not talked a whole lot about in my church because it didn't fit in to the idea that we were special and chosen, because it portrays more the idea that everybody is equal, because everybody got the same thing. So it creates a problem. This is one of the parables that I use to say, or to make my theory of that everybody, every soul will be saved eventually, because everybody got, this illustrates that very much so. But if you come to it with a preconceived idea, I've heard a commentary that I read was that it was just talking about the saved people, ones that were saved. So it was a grumbling of people that were already chosen in God's elect. But I don't think that really what it has to say about at all.
Do we believe that God created us all?
Yeah, but the Calvinist point of view, John Calvin, promoted the idea that some were saved from the foundation of creation. Some would be saved and some would be not. And that's prevalent today.
I was influenced by growing up in this congregation.
Right. You grew up differently.
I did, yes. Right. And I understand that.
Right.
But yes, I grew up taught that God loves us all and therefore saves us all.
So last Sunday, we talked about the idea that if somebody did something really nasty to us, that there should be some type of justice. And the idea that that person should not necessarily be saved. I know, and I'm not trying to trivialize, I thought about it this week that maybe I was trying to trivialize some people's bad experience that happened to them, you know, by saying that that person is going to be saved also, the possibility of it. I'm not trying to trivialize somebody's traumatic experience that they had in their life.
I don't think it's that they shouldn't be saved. I don't think I ever said that. I think that they may need to kind of go through some other things before they get to the same heaven that somebody who didn't do all those horrible things and lived their life with a Christian such goes to right away. So I don't think it's that they shouldn't be saved.
Okay.
They get there, but they need to.
So if you would apply that parable that we just read, how would you incorporate that into your idea?
Well, I don't know that I have, but it's just something that I believe.
Right, okay. And I'm not disagreeing with you. I think it'd be very easy for us to, to look at things that happen in our lives and say that person should be punished for something. I mean, we want equal justice for it. Now, I did hear this week that there were capital punishment on four federal government was going to start up capital punishment. They had four people that they were going to end their lives sometime here real soon.
The trouble with capital punishment is that it's so final. And in the past, people have discovered later that they made a mistake, that that person wasn't guilty of what that person would suffered capital punishment for. And once you have issued capital punishment, there's no going back. And again, I don't think that, well, I personally don't want to be the judge. I am glad I am not the judge, not the judge of who goes to heaven, not the judge of who
we're not supposed to be.
I don't want to be.
Right. Governor
Huckabee.
Governor Huckabee this week was talking about capital punishment, and he was governor of Arkansas at one time, and he had to put to death some people, and he said he didn't really like doing it. He didn't like being responsible for that aspect of it.
There's still going back.
Yeah. And actually, financially, it's cheaper to keep somebody in jail for a lifetime than it is to, for capital punishment, believe it or not.
I've read that.
Yeah. But so what do you get out of this parable? Some worked longer than others. The labor force was upset. The owner and workers. What do you take away from it? Can we see the landowner as God? Or can we see the landowner as Jesus? The people that worked started early on in the day, people who lived a Christian life all their life, or a good spiritual person who lived all their life. What do we take away from this?
Again, I think what I take is we're not the judge, and we're not in a position to judge, and so it's not up to me to condemn somebody to whatever.
So if you got the gates of paradise, I'm just about done, so. If you got the gates of paradise and there was people standing there that you disapproved of, or how would you feel about that? And then each got...
What it's saying is it doesn't matter when you come to believe.
Yeah, it says
whether
that too.
Whether it's early on or whether it's later in life or whatever. But once you have that enlightenment, then you should have the same rewards as those who've been there as long, for a long time.
So what about deathbed confessions? So some deathbed confessions?
Yes.
Yeah. They're just, doesn't this demonstrate that deathbed confessions are just okay too?
Right.
And that God, or Jesus, is illustrating that God can do whatever he wants.
Yeah, because a lot of people won't face their reality until, you know, the time comes when they know they're going to die.
So we can show that there's different times, it illustrates different times in which people turn their lives around, and some at the very last moment. I think that's one.
Some people don't break down and admit, you know, until the very end. I don't know why, but they don't.
I think it also illustrates that the first will be last. I think it illustrates that things are not the way we seem think they are.
Right.
I think he was speaking also to the Jews and the leaders at the time. They thought they were chosen, God's elect people, and so therefore they had the right to get more out of the deal. So if a Gentile got salvation at the time, he was also speaking to that.
But Jesus rectified that.
Yes. But it upset people.
Yes.
It did.
It still does. The Jewish
yes.
faith is
concerned. It still does today.
Yeah.
Right. Very much so. And even to the point where they're jealous and envious and all that.
Yeah, even within the Christian community itself.
Yeah. Dan.
I've often wondered if maybe there weren't enough souls to go around, and some people don't have a soul, and they're just coming in, and they'll fall by the way when they die.
Soulless people? That idea is a viable way of looking at things. People that do terrible violence. You know, the idea was wondering, has been asked whether or not they have a soul at all.
Yeah.
I think you can have living beingness without any, I guess you can, without an eternal soul in it. I'm not sure how that works. Paul illustrates that in that case, it'd be like someone escaping a fire. You would be a naked soul. And so the idea of a naked soul, which I'm not sure what a naked soul is. Is that a clean slate, or is that, you know, where there's nothing but just a little bit left? Or, I mean, if you took everything out of a person that's that bad, would there be anything good left? I mean, what? existence or self-recognizing that person. I mean, if that person was so bad and did so many bad things, would you recognize that person if you took all that bad out and said, okay, what's left?
Yeah, who would want to recognize all that bad?
I don't know. I'm just I just asked him the question. Is there anything left?
That's a naked soul.
So it would go back to a blank slate, maybe. So then you could say, well, it could be reincarnated back around again.
You just fall by the way and back to dirt.
Go back to dirt.
It's hard to think of somebody being 100% bad, though. I mean, I don't know anybody. There are people I don't like as much, but I know that they also have some good in them.
So if you take, you know, Mussolini, Hitler, Pol Pot, and all these people who were, you know, creative war. I mean, there's a whole host. If you study history, there's a whole host of leaders there. We are living in a relatively peaceful time on this earth compared to times before. There's always been wars and people killing each other and on and on. So what's left of those people? Don't these mass killers even care? They care for something in their life. There's something, or a pet, or an animal, or something.
Yeah, I mean,
they have a family.
Some good in them.
Yeah.
At one time, I mean, you know, a lot of times there's somebody's son, brother, whatever, and at one time somebody killed them, so there is something in them, but, you know.
Yeah. So if you take all that out of that individual, would they go back to being a child, like a childlike?
Yeah, they miss someone have that little bit where they started out.
Well, maybe that's what Jesus says. We all have to become like little children again.
Maybe.
We have to shut off all this stuff and become like little children so we can spiritually grow again.
Isn't that what death does? Is it take you back?
Does it take us back or move us forward?
You can look at that two ways, but doesn't it take you back to the more of a before all it kind of prior to any of the bad that you may have done?
I understand what you're saying. So it zeroes things out, so we start out off of kind of a zero again.
You go back to zero.
And so isn't that what redemption and saving of the soul is all about?
Yeah. Isn't
somewhat
that what Jesus said?
Yeah. You shed off this humanness.
Right. In other words, you get a clean slate. It's clean and you're going back and it's like a new start.
And so isn't this parable an illustration of everybody gets that?
Yes.
You have to retain some of that so you learn for the next time. You have to retain some of that, you know, stuff. Say, oh, I'm not going to do that again.
Yeah. But
that's part of your experience.
Well, if reincarnation, you talk about coming back and going through the veil of forgetfulness.
Yeah.
Okay, so.
But your soul knows deep down in. Yeah.
So I'm not conscious of it.
Your subconscious might be.
Then I don't remember it.
Well,
then how do I.
But something in you knows that, like a feeling, sometimes with a feeling, and you just like, oh no, I'm just going to stay away from that person or something. Something tells you.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
And I think you still have to have that in order to learn and grow.
So you don't necessarily go back. You maybe zero out with some kind of, like you say, conscious awareness.
Sometimes you have to take good with bad. You know, you have to face the truth. I was wrong. You know?
Yeah, I admit to when I was
young,
I was
wrong. Yeah, you have to face the truth to grow.
Yeah.
Population keeps getting bigger and bigger all the time. I suppose maybe it's run out of
souls.
Souls.
There is that idea that the well of souls is that we have more. The population is coming back, and people are getting so great, and that people are coming back around for the final, you know, an end coming at one time. So all the souls want to be living all at once for redemption or whatever.
You know, it's recreation, or, you know.
Yeah, recreating or perpetuating creation again.
Right.
Yeah. Because I don't believe that we humans were created by the God that was beyond the, you know, way beyond. I think we were created by a lesser God to some degree, because that's what the fall was forcing matter and soul together. That I don't think was supposed to happen. And that's why redemption came out, salvation came out. Because you have to have some way of saving the soul, or the soul energy that's in
and
all of us.
Why Jesus came in,
yes,
to bring it about.
But, and I think, again, when you start looking at the bigger and bigger picture, you realize how precious that salvation is. Mm-hmm. And why would I want to keep it from anybody? Why would I want to do that? I don't want to do that.
Yeah, who are we to judge a person as far as whether or not they should go to heaven?
We shouldn't, but we do.
Yeah, it's a failure of us as humans. As the parable said, was that the ones that got, you know, were good all their lives, said, why this person is only good for a little bit? Why do they get the same thing as me?
I know, but then that's not a very good person, is it?
No, so suddenly everything was reversed. But when you thought all your life you were the best, suddenly you reverse and you're down on the bottom of the pile.
Yeah, because maybe you're not the best when you think like that.
So,
I mean, you're doing it for like rewards or something, you know?
Yeah. Well, isn't that built into a lot of theology? We do good things in order for the crowns that we are supposed to attain in for heaven.
But then we get mad when we see somebody that didn't accomplish much in our eyes, and they're right there with us, and yeah, they're a little bit late.
Yeah, you ain't got no crowns. Get back here.
Yeah, see, that's why, you know, many years ago they had public shame to try to control.
Yeah. I think we somehow have to deal with this duality in which we exist in, and it's really, really hard, I think, really, really hard. But I think we shouldn't be. I'll be happy if I make it. If everybody else is there, great. I have no qualms about anybody who lived on this earth, that walked on this earth and traveled through this earth, being there and being saved. I mean, who am I to say? I'm going to slide in at the last minute, you know, like sliding into home plate. Under the door. Ha! I made it! Yeah, my tail gets caught there. I've been.
I agree. Who am I to judge? And I personally don't even want to be put in a position to have to judge.
No, I don't. I don't want to. I think, you know, I'm not trying to negate laws of the land. I think laws of the land, if you commit a crime, they're necessary. You have to have that type of stuff. I'm talking about divine laws, not, you know, laws of the land. I mean,
yeah, I'm not talking about, like, if you steal or hurt or kill, you're going to get punished here on earth.
Yeah.
But it's not for me to judge who gets saved.
Right.
You know, God gets to be the judge, not me.
Well, one of the arguments I heard about capital punishment was that if you get rid of them, you send them up to God, let him deal with them.
Capital punishment has been around as long as people have.
Yeah, it has been.
And it's basically the concept that someone has done something so heinous that they don't have deserve to be there.
Well, what do you do about the women who were killed because they thought they were witches and they thought different? And so did they really do a heinous crime? I think the heinous crime is measured by what is considered to be normal in a particular group of people.
Well,
if you're going to work with your children in the back of your car, Don't, what did he normally do? Put him in daycare? And he just forgot.
Or maybe he liked it all the time.
I think he just forgot. I think he forgot to drop him off at daycare.
Boy, I don't know.
I don't know.
I find...
I can't accept that.
That's why you should put something up front to make you realize, okay, baby's in that car. You hardly ever do this.
Put your purse or wallet back there with the kid.
Yeah.
And then you
get out of the car and you close the door, don't you?
No,
I have never ever left one of my kids in the car.
Well,
never.
I never
left
my kid in the car either.
Well,
I never did that. So
is forgetting a justification for the crime that he committed?
No.
I don't know if it's a justification, but you know, I don't think the intent was to purposely
So his intent was okay. So that what was flawed or
even intent in that case, it was just a being forgetful, one thing on the mind, one track mind. You know, like I always say to you, if you're going to go downstairs, get something that's all you need. That you'll see the stuff on the stuff that might want you to take down.
Okay, so okay. Then if men are just one track minded, then should the laws of the land be allowable and forgive this man for forgetting about his two kids in the back? I don't think men are all one track. They just have a lot of things on their mind.
I'm sorry, I just don't.
Some are more forgetful than others. Yeah.
But I mean, if he really loved his family,
yeah, I mean, we don't.
He's in more pain than the justice system could ever.
And there's no way of us really knowing if he did it intently or if it was just, I mean, I was like, I really did it. And I love my children.
As if it was frantic when it
did. Yeah.
I'm glad I'm not sitting on that one, that's for sure. And
that ends up the Lord punishing him when he figures.
So what do you do? You say, okay.
You don't just let him free.
I know. There's got to be some kind of,
there's got to be some kind of justice.
But I don't know. It's a hard one, especially if
it
really.
So he makes sure he has no other kids.
Well,
I'm not sure.
I can go from one room to another and I get that room.
Yeah, that's because we're getting old.
But there are certain things you don't forget no matter what.
Right.
I know, but sometimes you're in a habit like you never take your children to the job.
Believe.
I always did it.
I can't imagine the kids being back there being quiet.
Yeah,
how could you possibly put a child in a vehicle unless you stick it in the trunk?
I know. It's kind of really hard because you're always looking in your rearview. You would see something back there. Well, like, imagine as you're driving, you know.
When my kids were little and they were in the back seat, I was constantly looking in the mirror or peeking back to see what they were up to.
Does it go to the intelligence of the person who had, of the father?
What should it?
It goes back.
Should we allow the laws of the land to take that into consideration?
I don't think he should be punished as if he had done it on purpose.
And so what does that mean? He gets 5 years instead of 10?
Well,
that's the same as if you're in a vehicle accident and you kill somebody. Are you liable for that person's death, yes or no?
Yes. You may not have
intentionally done it, but you're still responsible.
Yeah.
And the father is responsible for those two kids.
Yeah.
I don't care.
Yeah, because if you're texting, and I know you're texting, you kill somebody, you're in deep trouble.
I understand that.
It's a hard thing. I mean,
it's going to be very hard on the whole family. But at some point, you've got to face reality, and you've got to face your consequences, period. period.
There was an article in the paper about an accident where someone was killed, and the newspaper article said, and he wasn't even on his phone or texting.
Well, that's a big thing anymore, believe it or not. I see, believe me, I see a lot of people texting.
I seen a guy the other day on a motorcycle texting. Now, can you believe that?
I believe anything anymore. I've seen too much on the road anymore. I believe anything. So at some point, you have to make people accountable for their mistakes in the law of land. Now, if you're talking about divine laws, that's one thing. But if you're talking about laws of the land, I'm sorry, you made a mistake. Now, do I think that, I don't believe that everybody should be penned up somewhere.
Right.
There's other ways of dealing with people who don't have a history of crime. And I remember years ago, they used to have like the penitentiary where they had farms.
Yes.
And they worked. And they should still be allowed to be productive in a, some type of setting, whatever that is.
I think they should all be productive. Mm-hmm. I think that they should be paid a decent wage, but at the same time, they should pay what would amount to rent, food, and the extra cost of security. Of course, you can't take everything they make away, but, you know, a good portion of it. But make every one of them that is capable do something.
Well,
don't let them just sit there.
Yeah.
Don't let them go and work out till they're Hulk Hogan looking.
Years ago, it used to be in the prisons that these guys that were in prison were actually introduced into a trade. So that once they were released, they had something to look forward to. And they don't have that.
And I made license plates, yeah.
Let them do something productive.
Yeah.
They could go and produce something and market it to help support the prison in the cost of incarceration.
There's a lot of environments in which people grew up with no chance whatsoever.
Right.
And I think
these young kids that are going in for drugs and gangs and all this, it's because they don't have anything to look for.
That's right.
Where if they had a trade and were released, at least they would have something substantial to take out and be productive to the community.
That costs money, and we don't want to spend no money on people.
Right.
The what?
People don't, it might give them a purpose.
Yes.
A lot of people don't have that anymore.
Yes.
You know, and just is like somebody sitting in jail slip. So I think it's probably worse torment for a mind. I cannot imagine sit there for long. I mean,
I think that's cruel and unusual. In a lot of cases, that's cruel and unusual. But
yeah.
Now, there are some criminals that are really.
Yeah. But it would make their time go by quicker, too, if they were actually productive.
Well, Epstein. Now, he's a case where I think, you know.
They should just throw the key away.
Oh, wow. Whatever happens there.
Excuse me.
I'm sorry, people who take advantage of young children and whatnot. I now there I would say there should be some justice. I'm sorry. I mean, that's, we have lots of problems, don't we? You have divine, you have human laws and you have divine laws, but still. I think
he's going to be some wealthy, famous people.
They even say the Clintons are behind whatever happens, even, you know, because they don't want their dirty past exposed.
It seems like a lot of that's coming up now, a lot more. And I think.
Coming back to haunt people, then.
I think I can list, to me, I list that as one of the things that as women and minorities start emerging, the males are starting to, mostly white males, are getting a lot of exposure on a lot of the stuff they've been doing for a long, long time. And not every white male is a dirty scumbag. And, huh?
Yeah, it's about time.
I think it's about time. I told.
A lot of men, and I'm not including anybody here, I've never felt that here, but I've encountered men where they aren't actively anti-women or, you know, anything that you can say, But when you try to talk to them, you get the feeling that you're the dumb little woman and they're the big strong man.
Right.
Well,
oh, yeah.
You have any value to say, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just talked to a friend of mine. He's an older man. He's in a religious environment in which women have no authority whatsoever. And I said, I thought the next president should be a woman. Oh, my, no. That's a man's job, he said.
It'd be nice, unfortunately, of the fix out there. I don't think it's going to be.
Well, I'm not going to possibly what's going to happen to the president. It's just that the idea of male dominance, and this was a white male too, is still very much alive in churches and what have you. Mm-hmm. And believe me.
If we picked the right woman, I think we would have a great country again.
I think women are helping society, and minorities coming into power, coming into being, are helping us heal in this nation, or beginning to. First of all, you have to bring out all the, in order to heal, you have to pus the pimple. So you know, all this stuff has to come out. And
it's something like the reparations, though. We're supposed to give money to any person who was a child of a slave. Well, then we probably ought to give more money to Indians or the children of Indians. Or, let's see, the Italians were discriminated.
So who are we? Who is the we that's supposed to be given all this?
Yeah. But there's no end to the groups out there that were discriminated against or put down or whatever. So that it comes down to there's no one out there that's responsible for what happened 100, 200 years ago. We are responsible about what's happening now and need to go forward. And it's...
But they're
what's the sermon for next week?
Building bigger barns.
All right.
I forget, it has to do with that. When you say we are not responsible for it, but the nation is responsible for some of the, is accountable. So,
it's accountable, but you've got all that time in between. Were they responsible?
Did we not evolve and move forward and solve that problem?
We're working on it. I'm not saying I'm for reparations.
You know, reparations.
But the African American is the only person who came over here against their will that I know of. I knew the minute I said that, that was the wrong thing to say. I should have said, generally speaking.
Probably black Africans are the biggest and best known
group. I think that's where you have to, at some point, I say, forgiveness, grace, and mercy. Let's move on. And I think it's time to move on myself. I think it's time to turn the page and try to get equality as best we can now. And you know, we still have a ways to go for equality. Even women aren't getting the wages that they're supposed to be getting.
Yeah, I mean, there's inequality with more than just one race in this country.
Right.
What happened to the soul?
I think it's time.
It's
again.
Amen.
We are the soul.
Thank you. beneath the